So we're on the top of Daf Ayin Dalid Amud Aleph, and the last word on the first line, on the top line. V'lichshov Nami Kotesh. The Gemara is asking the following question. We have a malach in the Mishkan, which is codified in our Mishnah, which is called Dash. And Dash and Kotesh are very, very similar malachos. However, they apply in a slightly different way. Whereas Dash removes the outer husk of a kernel of wheat, Kotesh, which is otherwise known as pounding, removes an inner layer of bran that's still attached to the kernel. So we're not talking about the husk, but we're talking about bran. Since these two are very similar, and both are necessary in order to produce fine flour, which was used in the Mishkan, therefore the Gemara wants to know, why aren't these counted as two separate avos in the reckoning of 39 malachas? There should be a malacha called Dash, which we have, and an additional malacha called Kotesh. We saw something similar in the Gemara on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, where the Gemara tried to figure out why the Mishnah counts Zoreh, Borer, and Merakeid as three separate avos. And the answer was that these are three different processes in getting fine flour. We want to first winnow and take off the chaff, then we have to take out the pebbles, and then finally we have to put it into a sieve to sift it in order to get fine flour. And we counted these as three separate malachos. And the Gemara points out that in the Mishkan they actually did these three things. It's logical to assume that in order to produce bread, they would do not only dash, but kotesh as well. Why isn't kotesh counted as an av? Amar Abaye, shekein ani ochel pito below ktisha. It means the following. There are two types of breads. There's regular flour bread, which was manufactured through dash, and then there was fine flour bread that was a little bit more expensive, and it had the bran removed through the process of pounding, what we call ktisha. Abai says that although the process of dash is critical to remove the husk that covers the wheat kernel, but as far as the bran is concerned, you can make bread without ktisha, without removing the bran from the inner layer of the kernel. And in fact, the poor people would buy cheaper bread because it was less work putting into the bread. It wasn't made of fine flour. And that's fine. And so you see that kotesh is not critical. Rav wants to offer another approach. Hamani Rebihi. Let's attribute our Mishnah to Rebbe, Diomar, our avos melachos are boim chaser achas. We absolutely have to get this number 39. That's critical. The ichosh of kotesh, if you're now going to add kotesh, havile arboim, you've jacked up the number to 40. So let's combine dash and kotesh into one av melacha, and therefore we have 39. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, you're not being consistent. Lepuk chad mihanuch uli ayl kotesh. Take out one of these and put in kotesh. After all, our question was based on the fact that we counted Zoreh, Borer, Merakeid as three separate avos, because each one was part of a long process and was a slightly different segment of that process, and it was done in the Mishkan. What are you telling me? That in order to maintain the number 39 and not beef up the number too fat, you can't add kotesh. Well, okay, why not add kotesh and take out one of Zoreh, Borer, Merakeid, and you could still maintain the number 39? And the Gemara doesn't have an answer to this question to defend Rava. Ela machvarta, machvarta means the clear way, the white way. White is always considered a clear color. Kid Abaye, let's go back to Abaye. And Abaye is basically saying that kodesh is not critical. If you want to produce a decent piece of bread, it could be bran bread, you'd have to do zora, bora, meraki. Those are critical in order to get rid of, you know, the outer husk, in order to get rid of any pebbles that might be in there, in order to get fine flour. But as far as the bran is concerned, the pounding, that's not critical. And therefore, it's not counted as an av malach. In fact, Abaye proves this from the fact that an ani, a poor person, will buy the cheaper bread, which is lacking in ketisha. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a braisa. This is the malach of borer, perhaps one of the most complicated of all the 39 malachas, except for Hotzah, of course. Hayu lefanav. We have a braisa that tells you that in front of him he has mini ochel, he has different categories of food. Borer vi ochel, borer umeniach. He's allowed to take what he wants. And he's allowed to even take it and leave it for the future. Perhaps other people will eat it. Velo yivar. But he cannot select. I mean, you just told me borer, and now you tell me lo yivar. Vi imbirer, and not only that, if he went ahead and he selected, chayav chatos. Maika amar. Can we make any sense out of this braisa? That on the one hand, the braisa is lenient with regard to borer, allowing you to do so, and even for the future. And on the other hand, the braisa in the middle section says lo yivar, you should avoid it, which sounds, by the way, like a derabbanan, like a shvus. But then in the final part of this braisa, it says that if he went ahead, he was boris chayav chatos. How do we find any sort of integrity here in this braisa? And this is going to be the sugya for today that's going to occupy our minds. And we're going to have many, many different attempts to make sense out of this price. And each one of these attempts, until we finally get to the end of the light at the end of the tunnel, is going to be slugged up. Amar Ula. Ulam takes a shot at it. Hachi karma. This is what the braisa means. Borer vi ochel lebo bayom. Uborer umeniach lebo bayom. We're going to allow you to do borer, according to this braisa, as long as you're going to use it within the course of the day. And if you want to give it to someone else, that someone else will eat that selected food during the course of the day. However, to be borer for the sake of tomorrow, preparing, as it were, the food for Sunday, that we're not going to allow you to do. And not only that, if you went ahead and you were borer for tomorrow, then you chayav chatos. Very nice attempt, but the Gemara says it doesn't hold. Maskif lo Rav Chizda attacks this. V'chimuta, let me give you another example, he says. Let's apply your logic to Meleches Afia. Would we allow you to bake something on Shabbos lebo bayom? Would we allow you to cook something for bo bayom, for the purpose of today? We never differentiate between a malacha, whether it's done for the purpose of today or for tomorrow. If you're admitting to me that borer for tomorrow is a malacha, and he selects what he selects, and that's a violation of a chiv chatos, he cannot allow that just simply because he needs it for the day. We're not going to allow you to bake or cook for today. And therefore the Gemara says, Rav Chizda, don't just be destructive. Let's see if you can make sense out of this braisa. Elam Rav Chizda, let's put the braisa together in a different way. Borer vi ochel pachos mikashir. This is a real stretch. The braisa doesn't mention anything about pachos mikashir. But okay, let's give him some literary rope. You're allowed to be borer less than a shir. Borer meniach pachos mikashir. And you're allowed to select even for the purpose of others if it's less than a shir. Presumably the shir is a grogeres, because when it comes to food stuff, generally speaking, food has a shir of grogeres, which is a dried fig, and that we'll see when we talk more about the shiurim for Meleches Hotzah. So that we're going to allow you to select a small amount that's less than a grogeres, and it's almost as if you're doing something which skirts the law. Then, kishir, if he's being borer a full grogeret's worth, which is the shear from Malachis borer, lo yiv, or that he's not allowed to do, v'im birer, and if he went in and did so, he's chayav achatos. And once again, the Gemara is going to reject this interpretation as well. Maskif lo Rav Yosef, v'chimuto lefos pochos mikashir. If we give you an example from Aleches Afia, are we going to permit baking less than a grogeres, less than a shear? Even though the Torah says that you're not chayav a chiv misa, or in shogeg a chiv chatos, for less than a shear, but nevertheless we don't allow you to do something that's less than a shear. Could you imagine, let's leave the realm of Shabbos for a moment, in the case of Nevela, the shear is kezias, would we allow him to eat a half a kezias' worth of Nevela? In fact, Rabbi Yochanan, at the end of Masechtas Yuma, says that if you eat half a shear, you violate a Doraisa. You're not chayv malchus. And certainly if you would be ofe or any other malacha less than a shear, although you wouldn't be chayv kares, or you wouldn't be chayv chatos, but nevertheless you'd be violating an Issur Torah. So how can we allow you to do borer simply because it's less than a shear? Okay, Rav Yosef, very good, you're destructive. Can you come up with an justify the integrity of this price? Halama Rav Yosef, borer vi ochel biyat. Okay, now Rav Yosef introduces a very, very critical element in the equation of borer. And that is, how are you doing the borer? Are you using a utensil? There are certain utensils that are singled out for selecting. We'll talk about a funnel. We could talk about a sieve. And if you do it in an unusual way, and it's many steps removed from what the Torah considers a violation of borer as a malacha d'oraisa, then the Rabbanan are going to look the other way, and they're going to allow you to do this, even l'chatchila. Because again, keep in mind, whether it was Ula or it was Rav Chisda, and their two interpretations, both interpretations fell because how could the Braisa allow you to do this l'chatchila? Whether it's for today, whether it's chatzishir. But, says Rav Yosef, borer v'yochel biyad, if he's not using any utensil whatsoever, he's selecting it by hand, that's already very far removed from aleches borer. Borer miyach biyad. And if he wants to select it for somebody else, with his hands, that's fine. Then, we get to the level of what's called the middle section of the Braisa, an Issur Shvus D'Rabbanan, something that's Pater Aval Osur. And what's that? That's the case of Kanan Uvitamchui. These are utensils that are used for the purpose of Borer, but not in the most singular way, not in the most profound way. So a Kanan, for example, is what we call a funnel. So you have like a tube, and you put it on the top of a bottle, let's say, for example, and you pour something into that tube. And what happens is that larger pieces will not go through the smaller opening. Or, for example, you could have a tamchui. Tamchui is a plate. What they used to do is, and this, we used to see this, our neighbors who came from Paras, when they would check the rice before Shabbos, which they did over and over again, to make sure that there were no pieces of kernels of wheat, they would put it on a pan, that pan is called a tamchui, shake it around, so they could see where they could take out those pieces of, in that case, kernels of wheat. And in this case, to take out different kinds of black spots or small pebbles. So in this case, the Rabbanan said, although these are kalim, these are utensils, which are not the most profound borer utensils, which we're going to get to in a minute, the Rabbanan prohibited it. You're already getting closer to the real bona fide borer. So in birer potav alasur, he's not allowed to do it with these two utensils, but we don't punish him for that. He hasn't violated a doraisa. It's only a shvus d'rabbanan. But now we get to the real makoy borer, and that's benafa uvekvara lo yivrar v'imbirer chayv chatos. These are different types of sieves, you know, sifters. There's a sifter which is more fine, a sifter which is a little bit more coarse. You know, the women today, when they make sure to sift the flour, make sure that there's no bugs or anything like that, so they use different numbers, you know. These are different kinds of things. But this is a kli that is a professional utensil that's made in a way that you can really get rid of any kind of psoas, anything that you don't want in the mixture. But Rav Yosef is going to, unfortunately, suffer the same fate as his predecessors, Ul and Rav Chisda, at this time at the hands of Rav Hamnuna, Maskifle Rav Hamnuna, Midei Kanun V'Samchui K'tani. Look, Rav Yosef, you have a very nice piece of logic. You've really structured the laws of Bor into three different paragraphs, but there's no way you could convince me that this is what the Bryce has in mind. The Bryce doesn't even whisper a word about any sort of utensil, let alone to categorize different types of utensils. Can we find some sort of interpretation of this Bryce that would make the Bryce logical and consistent, but without going too far off afield from the actual text of the Bryce? Elam Rav Hamnuna, let's see if Rav Hamnuna could put this all together. Borer v'ochel ochel mitoch psoles. Borer meniach ochel mitoch psoles. Here Rav Hamnuna thinks he's introducing a variable which is very close to the text of the Braisa. The Braisa speaks about borer v'ochel, meaning he's taking out ochel. So borer v'ochel doesn't only mean that he is going to eat what he selects, but it means that he's selecting that which he will eat. And that's called ochel. That's not in any way Meleches Borer. Meleches Borer is defined essentially, says Rav Hamnuna, as choosing psoles. Get rid of the psoles. If you want to be Borer Meniach, Ochel Mitoch Psoles, that's fine. Even if you're putting it away for someone else, that's good. But Psoles Mitoch Ochel Lo Yivrar, now we get to the real bona fide Melechet Doraisa of Borer, and that's where you select the waste product, that which you don't want to use, those little pebbles and so forth, and you get rid of those. That is a violation of Borer Doraisa of Imbirer Chayav Chatos. And at this point you can imagine that in the audience, back in the bleachers, they're applauding, you know, he's got a standing room ovation, finally we have a good shot in the Braisa. No. Rav Hamnuna is going to suffer the same destiny as his predecessors. Maskif le'abai. Abai says, wait a minute. Midei ochel mitoch psoles k'tani. It says that you were ochel, borer ve'ochel. You selected and then you ate it. It doesn't say what you selected. There's no indication in this brisa that he selected that which he wants to get rid of. Or in the race of the Bryce of that which he wants to eat. Okay, Abaye, you're up now. El Amar Abaye, Borer V'Ochel Lialter, Borer Meniach Lialter. Obviously, this Bryce is focused on time periods. When is he eating that which he is preparing? He's perfecting it by being Borer. And clearly, the Braisa differentiates between Bo Bayom, and if it's not Bo Bayom, that's not something that Abai is guilty for, that's in the Braisa itself, is Borer V'Ochel Lialter, Borer Meniach Lialter. And this means, according to Tosfos interprets Abaye, that it's Toch Kedei Achila. What should I say? It's like putting a piece of fish in your mouth and removing the bone from your mouth. That's not Borer. That's Achila. That's the way you eat something. And if you select something to eat it immediately, then it's not called Borer. And that's permissible. Lebo Bayom, which is explicit in the Braisa, which means that he's not eating it now, but sometimes in the next, you know, 12 hours or so he's going to eat it, is Lo Yivar. That's not permissible. Now, how objectionable is it? In Birer, if he does this act of selection, and apparently it matters not whether he takes the ochel or he takes the psoles, according to Abaye, that variable is irrelevant. Nasek borer li otsar. And here Abaye reveals a little bit of a secret of what borer is all about. Borer is when you prepare an otsar. Otsar means storage. The Torah does not want you to involve yourself in forms of labor for the purpose of storage, as if you were a businessman, you know, putting food away, you know, for the future or perhaps to market it. V'chayev chatos. And if he's borer, but not for miyad use, then that's considered borer. So what happens to Abaye? Well, Amru Rabbanan Kamei de Rava, you can imagine Rava sharpening his knives, and to our surprise, Amar Lahu, when Rava heard about Abaye's pshat in the Braisa, Shapir Amar Nachmeni, Nachmeni is the pseudonym for Abaye, he said it very well. Now that's kind of rare, that Rava would stand up and applaud Abaye. And therefore, it would seem that this distinction that Abaye formulates in the Braisa, that are you eating it immediately? That's not called Borer. Borer means La'otzar, when you're putting it away for future use. That distinction is accepted by the Sugya, and that's the final pshat in this Braisa. Now, what I have to add to you here, and you know this better than I do, is that in Poskim, La'alocha, again, we can't go through the Sugya Borer, that would take us months, but you should know that almost all the different interpretations and the different variables that are mentioned here on the table are all relevant to the laws of Borer. And what we're going to require in the case of Borer to allow you to be Borer is, number one, Biyad, that you want to eat it immediately, you're not putting it away for later. Number two, it's got to be Biyad v'lo b'kli, we're not going to let you use any utensil whatsoever. And number three, we're going to require that you take the ochel from the psolas and not the other way around. So all the various conditions that are mentioned here are actually brought down in the poskim. And you're going to have to check off all these three conditions. It's got to be miyad, and it's got to be biyad, right? Miyad and biyad, and it has to be ochel mitoch psolas. Now we go on in Meleches Borer. Hoyu lefon of shnei mini ochlim ubirer v'ochel ubirer v'hiniach. Rav Ashi Masni Potur, Rav Yirmi Bidifti Masni Chayav. Okay, what's going on over here? You know, here he says that he did a borer, he ate it, or he left it for someone else to eat, and both Rav Ashi and Rav Yirmi both agree that he's violated the Isur Borer. Whether or not you take Rav Ashi as a drabanon, or you take Rav Yirmi as a doraisa with a chiv chatos, but everyone agrees that this borer is osur. And here we've come to the conclusion, after going through a painstaking interpretation of this braisa, that there are situations in which borer is mutter. So Gemara says, Rav Ashi masni potur v'atani chayav. If he's talking about the case in the braisa where you're prohibited from doing this borer, again, whatever conditions have to be met in order to violate borer d'oraisa, but the braisa says explicitly, chayav chatos. Lo kasha, we have to reinterpret Rav Ashi. He's talking about borer with a kli. Why does he say that it's potter aval osur? Because that's that middle category that we discussed in the braisa, which is only the rabbanon, ha beknon v'tamchli. He's talking about those kelim which aren't exclusively dedicated for borer. But Habanafa Uvekara, the Braisa that says that Yechayev Echatas for violating Meleches Borer, that's in the case where he uses these Kalim, which are professional, they're expert Kalim for the purpose of Borer to remove even the smallest of Psolas. And at this point, we already prove that the Gemara, although it accepts Abaye and distinguishes between Miyad and Liotzar for later use, but nevertheless, we also accept the other interpretation. And let me just see if I remember the names already. Sometimes there's so many different Amoraim here. That was Rav Yosef, that we distinguish between the different kinds of Kalim. And the Chiyuv d'oraisa for Meleches Borer is conditioned on the fact that he uses these specific and exclusive dedicated Kalim. Kiyasa Rav Dimi, and we've said many times Rav Dimi was the one who came from Eretz Yisrael, sometimes Rav Ovin, came from Eretz Yisrael, and they brought over the Shmua, the halachas from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. So Rav Dimi tells us, Omar Shabsa de Rav Bibi Havi, they used to divide up the different Shabbosos as to who would serve as the Darshan, you know, or the Shamash, you know, to serve the students, or who would serve as the Rav to Darshan. And on that particular Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, it was the Shabbos of Rabbivi. You know, they gave another year and a half, or whatever. V'klo, Rav Ami, Rav Asi, and he was visiting, in other words, Rabbivi was showing up at the table of Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Shoda Kamayu Kalkola de Peri, and they sort of threw out a bunch of different fruits, the different species of fruits, and it made it clear that the action of throwing out these fruits, you know, spilling it out in such a way that each fruit would be separate, was to avoid the violation of Borer. V'lo yadana, and it was confusing to me, as a witness to this event, imishum, why did they throw this out? Because sover ochel mitoch psoles asur, which would mean that if you chose to remove that food, that particular species or type of fruit, from the in order to get to the ones you want, that would be a violation of Borer. So he had to throw it all out on the table so that a person would be able to select that fruit which he wanted to eat. So he wants an orange, he doesn't want an apple. But now he sees there's an orange here, an apple here, he'll take the orange. Or maybe they were doing it for a different reason, not because of Borer. Imishum ayin yofa hu demechaven. What they wanted to do was show that, you know what, from our perspective, take it all. It's all in front of you. Take your picking. So that now the Gemara is throwing another variable into the equation of Borer, and that is that you can have two types of food, neither of which is psoles, but if for you, you don't want that food, that becomes psoles for you. The Gemara doesn't come to any conclusion, but certainly entertains that possibility. And this would be relevant, for example, if you're choosing, the poskim say you're choosing clothing that you want to wear on that particular Shabbos, and all your clothing is really fine, but nevertheless, if you take this one suit and you put it on the side in order to get to another suit because you don't want the first suit, it becomes subjectively your psoles. So in these different types of fruits, he had to throw it all out so that he would select the one that he wanted. Chizkia Omar, now here's a big chiddush of Chizkia, HaBorer Turmusin Mitoch Psoles Shalahem Chayav. This is a certain type of bean that requires cooking over and over and over again. And normally we're going to say that if you take out the one you wanted, certainly with your hand, and for immediate use, to eat it immediately, that would be okay. But not in the case of Turmusin, says Chizkia. Even if you're choosing the bean, leaving out the part that you don't want, you're still in violation. Is lema kasavra chizkia ochel mitoch psoles asur? Should we say that chizkia holds that even when you take that which you want and that which is objectively edible, everybody wants to eat these turmesin, which he translates in English as lupine beans. Okay, that doesn't help me too much, but anyway. So he says, are you in violation when you take the bean that you want to eat? Shiny turmosin. Here's the radical breakthrough of Chizkia. We turn now to Ayin Dalet Amud Beis. The Shalki Le Shiva Zimni. He's got to boil it and boil it over and over again, no less than Shiva Zimni, seven occasions. The Ilo Shalki Le Masrach. And if you don't remove the shell immediately, it's going to spoil. And right now, as is, because you need so many times to boil it over, if you leave it in its present state and it's got some mixture of shells over here, then it's going to spoil. So imagine, Rabosai, this is the radical breakthrough of Chizkia, that if you have something that's really ochel, but right now, as it is, if you don't do something, you will cause its spoilage. It's kipsoles mitoch ochel dami. We already consider it now as psoles. Okay, Rabosai, that's the end of the sugya of Borer. And if we think that we're out in the clear for today, I got news for you. We're going to find out about making an oven on Shabbos. Okay. First, Hatochen. Tochen, we said, was grinding. Now, grinding could be done in two ways. Either you take something and you pound at it, or you can slice something into very, very thin slices. And that, too, is called tochen. Omar Rav Papa, Haiman de Purim Silka. Okay, we're not sure what silka is. It might be beets, it might be spinach. But anyway, he slices it into very small pieces. We call it mincing. Chayav mishum tochen. So he doesn't have to actually pound it. He, even if he slices it, he violates the melacha of tochen. And the implication here is that he violates a melacha da'oraisa. Omer of Menashe, Haimain de sol is silti. Another similar halacha, but now we're not talking about ochlim. We're not talking about a foodstuff. We're talking about grinding as a meleches tochem in a piece of wood. And silte means that he takes a large piece of wood and he makes silte out of it. He takes a knife or whatever he uses, and he wants to make small strips of wood to feed his fireplace. So he chops up this wood into very thin little chips. And that too is chayav mishum tochen. So we see clearly that tochen applies even to something that's not edible. Omar Rav Ashi, he kapid a mishchasa. Let's say he wants each chip to be an exact size. Then not only is he chayav mishum tochen, but as we discussed yesterday at great length, you could sometimes do one action and incur two different malachas, chayav mishum mechatech. He's also going to be chayav for a different malacha of cutting. Mechatech means that whenever you slice something to a certain specific measure, and you're very makpid about that measure, you violate the malacha of mechatech. Now the Mishnah says, halosh ve'ha'ofer. And meleches lisha is going to be a sugya later on. But now, the Gemara is focused on the choice of the word ofer to describe the 11th of the series of what we call Sidur de Pas. Omer ha'papa shavak tana didan bishol samimonim da'avi b'mishkan v'nokat ofer. We see a deviation from the general rule, which is that the Tana lists those malachos which were done in the Mishkan. Now, presumably, baking and cooking are all part of the same entity, the same malacha. But why did the Mishnah prefer baking over cooking when in fact cooking was done in the Mishkan? Because when they wanted to create the dyes for the curtains, what they did was they took some imanim, different kinds of herbs, and they put it into a cauldron, and they put the fire on with the water in it, and they cooked the some imanim, and then the dye would come out of the herbs. So why do you mention ofer? And the answer is Tana didan sidur de pas nokat. What the Tana does is, in a sense, it starts backwards. It starts with the end product, which is a loaf of bread, and goes backwards. What are the necessary processes in order to create that loaf of bread? So we're going to start with Zriya, and then in Eretz Yisrael we said there was a Harisha after the Zriya, and we go on and on and on until we reach the culmination of a loaf of bread, which is called Afir. And our Tana wants to present the Malachos in the context of Sidura de Pas. And therefore, all the malachas that are mentioned are necessary for Sidur de Pas. And apparently, the Ran says that the reason why Sidur de Pas was more exciting for our Mishnah than dyes, in other words, to cook the herbs with Bishul to create the dyes, is because not too many people on too many occasions collect herbs in order to cook them and remove the dyes from them. What's absolutely common and what is chashuv is afir, baking a loaf of bread. And we break bread and we eat a meal. So the Mishnah wanted to set up the malachas as culminating in something that's not only common but also important. Not to exclude Bishul. Obviously, Bishul is included in Afiyah, but the Mishnah is going to choose Afiyah rather than Bishul. Omar of Achabar Avira, Man de Shoda, Sichta Le'atuna Chayav Mishum Bishul. We said before that you could be Chayav for Tochein if you chop up small pieces of wood, chips, even though it's not Ochel. What about Bishul? Could you be Chayav for cooking something that's not an Ochel? It's not edible? The answer is yes. A person takes a peg that's made of wood, and he wants to harden it, make sure it's tough. And what he does is, he puts it into an oven. Now, this is really interesting, because Rav Acha says that in this case, he's chayav mishum mevashel. Now, without getting into the question of whether you could have mevashel on something that's not edible, that's the assumption here, but there's a more profound problem over here. How can you call it mevashel? This is not bishul. Every process of bishul takes something hard and softens it. Here, he's doing just the opposite. He's taking something soft and he wants to harden it. How, in what stretch can you call that mevashel? And oddly enough, the Gemara says pshita. The Gemara is totally focused on the fact that you could chayav bishul mevashel on something that's not edible. But let's focus for a moment on the process itself. Is this really called bishul? And the Gemara says, Ma'od etema, I would have said, if not for Rav Acha, that l'shrurei mona kamechaven, shrurei, it means, you know, to give you strong muscles. You want to strengthen this peg. And that's not called mevashel, because to harden something is the exact opposite of mevashel. Kamash malon, this is where Rav Acha, his breakthrough is, that the mirpa rafi v'hadar kamit. So again, you have to know more about the physics of putting, you know, something that is naturally dry into an oven, and you want to harden it. But the physics here of Rav Acha is that there's a two-stage process. And because before you harden the peg, you actually soften it by putting it into the oven. And then when finally you get rid of all the moisture inside this peg, then it becomes hard. But you cannot achieve hardening without softening first. And that's why it's called bishul. The softening process, which is the bishul, is an absolute prerequisite in order to achieve your goal of hardening this peg. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Haiman di artich kufra. Kufra's pitch, and he heats it up, and by heating up pitch, he converts it from a solid to a liquid. Chayv mishum mevashel. And this is obvious because, again, even we've already established that bishul is not limited to ochlin, and pitch is certainly not edible, but we've established that bishul means to soften something. So if you take something that's hard, and you convert it into something that's a liquid, for sure that's bishul, pshita. The Gemara says, Ma'od, the same I would have thought. Kevan da hadar vi kusha emalo. There's not a permanent state of softening. It turns into a liquid for a very short period of time, and then when it cools off, it becomes hard. It goes back to being a solid. That's not bishul. Cooking is not temporary, it's permanent. But here, the process of liquidification is only a stage, it's only a temporary period of time. So why is this called cooking? So Rashi explains, Kamash Balon, that this is called a tolda of bishul. And it's a tolda of bishul because at one stage you soften it, you make it into a liquid, and this, whatever he achieves by doing so in order to cook the pitch, and then even after it hardens, it's not the same as it was before. Maybe it gets rid of certain chemical impurities. And that's called the told of cooking because at stage one, which is absolutely necessary for him, it will liquidify. Amar Rava, Haiman di Ovid Chavita, he manufactures a barrel out of earthenware. Chayav mishum sheva chatos. Anyone who's learned Masechta Makis knows that the Gemara often tries to create an action and maximize the various violations in one single action. So imagine the man created a barrel and he violates seven different melachos. Okay, what are these seven different malachas? Rashi has the whole list. I'm not going to go through the Rashi with you. I'll just give it to you in English very quickly. Rashi says he takes the clods of earth and first he grinds them into fine particles. Rashi says he has to get rid of the larger pebbles, and that's called borer, sorting. Then he has to take what's ever left and put into a sieve and get rid of even smaller pebbles. That's called sifting. That's otherwise known as merakeh. And then he gets to the point of lisha, because he has to add water into this mixture, and he has to knead the earth with the water. Then he has something called memachek, which is smoothing, because again, he wants to create a structure out of this clay, and he's got to smooth it down. And finally, when the clay is ready, he's got to turn on the oven. That's a malacha called avara. And after he turns on the fire in the oven, he's got to put the barrel into the oven, bake it until it becomes hard. So imagine with one process, going through stage by stage, he violates seven different malachas. But that's easy. Tanura, if he makes out of this oven, out of this earthenware, an oven, then chayav mishum shmona achatos. In addition to the eight malachas that he violates, he's got another violation here, which is called makeh bepatish. And the Rishonim want to know, why is it that when he creates the barrel, we don't have makeh bepatish? And the answer is that in the case of the barrel, he simply puts it into the oven to harden the barrel. He doesn't have to do an extra action of makeh bepatish to perfect it. But in the case of an oven, even after he hardens the oven by putting the clay inside the heat, you know, heating it up, he still has to add an extra layer of clay for insulation purposes, so that an oven has to have another layer inside of it. And when he puts on that layer, he perfects the oven, and he violates the malach of makeh bepatish. Omar Abayi Haimandi Ovid Chalta, if a person creates a large receptacle, and he takes reeds, and he weaves them together, so to speak, is chayev achases rechatos. He can be liable for 11 violations of 11 different malachos. And once again, Rashi goes through the entire list. First of all, he has to pull the reeds out of the ground. That's called meleches kotzer. Also, he's violation of meleches zorea, because what's going to happen, it's going to maximum the produce of the ground to produce more reeds, to replace these reeds. Then he's violating meleches ma'amer, because he has to gather the reeds together. Then he's borer, he has to select the ones that are good. Again, I'm not an expert at creating this kind of a kli, so I don't know. But apparently, in general, you have to do a borer process, because not all the reeds are successful. Then he has to be memachik them, he has to smoothen them down. Then he has to grind them. In other words, he's got to slice them into very, very thin strips. And he's got to cut them to a specific size. That's mechatech. And now we get into the malachas of weaving, if you remember, that we discussed in the Mishnah back on Daf Ayin Gimel. And the first malacha of weaving is called mesich, which means that he sets up the chassis. If you remember, he has to stretch it out from one loop, from one roll to the other. Then he's got to loop the reeds around the chassis. And then he has to set up what's called the heddles, if you remember, we spoke about that. And then he does the actually weaving of the basket. And finally, after he weaves it, he needs a final blow, which is makeh bepatish. And that's called a violation of 11. V'chayte lefume. Now, sometimes what you do when you have this basket is you want to create a border around the basket on the opening. So what you do is you sew it up. And now he's chayav for another two malachos. And that is tofer and kosher, because he's going to have to tie the threads together. And basically, all of these malachas are violated in the process of creating, again, this kind of a chalta, this round basket made of reeds. Rashi is bothered by the fact that Melechus Bona is not listed because he's really structuring something. And Rashi invokes a principle which we're going to discuss later on in Masechta Shabbos called Ein Binyan Bekele. That when you build something that's not Mechuber Lekarka, for example, a utensil that's movable, you don't violate Melechus Bona. Rashi wants to know about the malachos of Ar. You know, usually when you create from a hide something, you have to skin it. And when he peels off the skins of the reeds, l'chora, that should be a malacha of tanning. So Rashi has a long discussion about that. Hagozes es hatzemer v'amalabno. He shears the wool off the back of the sheep and he whitens it. Omar Rabba Bar Rav Chonam Rav Yochanan Hatove Tzemer She'al Gabi Behema B'Shabbos. What happens if instead of having the wool on his table and he creates threads out of the wool, he actually makes these threads on the back of the animal on Shabbos, which is a little bit unusual. That's not the normal way that you would make these threads. But nevertheless, chayv shalosh chatos. Aches mishum gozes. Again, subsequently he cuts it off. So he's chayv mishum gozes. And number two, chayv mishum menapets. Because what he has to do is he has to make sure that the threads are not tangled. The aches mishum tove. And he's spinning the threads. Rav Kahana rejects all these three. Ein derech ziza bekach, ein derech menapitz bekach, v'ein derech tvai bekach. So let's go backwards. We'll go up backwards because it's a little bit easier. So this is not called the normal way of spinning when you spin the threads on the back of the animal. Number two, this is not the way you disentangle the various pieces of threads when it's attached to the body of the animal. And not only that, to first make the threads and then cut them off and shear off, that's also not the way you do shearing. Shearing has to come before you have the threads. So the Gemara challenges Rav Kahana v'lo, is this not so? Let's go back to the Mishkan. V'asanya, we have a brisa in the name of Rav Nechemya. Shatov bizim v'tovu bizim. These chachmei lev, these women who are, you know, dedicated to create the gifts for the Mishkan, what they did was, while the hair of the goats was still on the body of the goat, they would wash the hairs and spin the hairs while they're on the body of the goats. Alma, we see clearly that tviya al gav behema shma tviya, that even though they did the spinning of the threads while it was attached to the animal's back, that's what they did. So you see that this is a normal, acceptable way of spinning. So the Rishonim here want to know, why did they do such a strange thing? Okay, they were chachmei lev, they were brilliant, and they were inspired with wisdom, but so why would they spin wool while it was still attached to the animal? So I think it's the Meiri, I don't see it right now, who says that if you spin hair while it's still growing, it has a certain color to it, a luster to it. So the Gemara says, Chachma Yisera Shani, that Rav Kahana was of the opinion that you cannot derive any conclusions about a malacha, what's considered a normal way of doing the malacha, by these unusual, inspired people, the Chachmei Lev, who were able to do things with their wisdom that you and I could never do. So an ordinary person would not spin a thread while the wool is still attached to the animal's body, and therefore that's considered Shelo Kedarka. This is not Derech Tviya. By the way, as we continue, I just want to mention that the phrase for something that's unusual is called kilachar yad, which literally means when you do it with your hand in the back. I would give an example. Let's say you know, on Chol HaMoed, we don't write, but you're allowed to write with a shinui under certain circumstances. So, well, you need a writing kelachar yad, sort of like you hold the pen between two fingers, and you do it in a very unusual way. So anyway, this phrase kelachar yad, or shalom kedarko, is a very important phrase all over Melechah Shabbos. And that's a chisaron of what we call meleches machsheves. The Torah requires that you do the melach in the exact way, professional way that it's done. And the Gemara wants to claim, at least according to Rav Kahana, that although there's a super duper professional who's able to achieve this tviyah when it's on the back of the animal, that's not the normal way of doing it. However, let's just point out that Rabbi Bar Bar Chana is not impressed with this logic. He thinks that if you could achieve that spinning because you're inspired and it would create a better product, then that's considered by definition kedarka. Not that everyone would do it, but anyone who is imbued with such a special capability, that's considered kedarka. That's considered an acceptable way of doing it. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in a braisa, Hatolesh es hakanof. Instead of cutting off the wing from a bird, the feather, he plucks it. Ve'akotmo, and he clips it. Right? It's got too many pieces to it. He has to get rid of certain pieces. Ve'amarto, and he pulls off its hairs. It's chayev sholosh chatos. He violates three chatos. What are these three chatos, three malachos? On Rav Shimon Lakish, number one, tolesh, by plucking off the feather, is chayev mishum gozes. That's a different way of shearing. Again, you have to assume that according to this braisa, this is still considered kedarka. It's still within the normal range of removing a feather from the wing of a bird. Kotem, when he clips it, he wants to make it a certain specific size, and he's probably creating a quill, you know, for ink, is chayav mishum mechatech. That's called cutting whenever it's for a certain size. Memaret, when he pulls off the hairs, that's called memachik, which is smoothing. Hakosher v'amate, the Mishnah says tying and untying. Kshira b'mishkan heichan havi, where do they tie knots in the Mishkan? Amar Rava, they needed pegs for the tents. Is shekein koshin yisados b'oholim, and they would tie down these pegs to the tents. So the Gemara asks, that's a kosher? Hahu kosher almanas lahatirhu? Well, it's true that when they set up the tent, that necessitated kosher, but that was only on a temporary basis. Because when the Anana covered would move, they would follow suit. So take apart the tent, and they would move on. Elomar Abaye. Abaye says, Shekein orge yirios, the weavers of the curtains in the Mishkan, shenifsikol lahen nema, if let's say one of the threads would break, koshino, so they would tie together two threads. And they made a knot. Omalei Rav Roses Tabai Tirats the Kosher. Okay, fine. You found a case in the Mishkan where they tied knots when the thread broke. But Matir Ma'ikel Meimer, where did you find untying in the Mishkan? At least I found untying in the Mishkan in the case of the pegs that were used to tie down the tents. V'chitem, and if you'll answer, be de'imis ramile tre chuti kitre bahari adodi. Maybe on some occasion there would be two knots that were adjacent. Shari chad, they would untie one. V'kater chad, and they would tie down the other one. He says, hashtel if ne'melech basar v'dam ein osin ken. If you were standing in front of a king, this would not be a normal way of doing it. This is not impressive, you know, when you untie one in order to tie the other. Is the same melech malchi amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu osim? Is that what they would do when they were building the Mishkan in front of Hashem? Elam Arava v'itema Rav Eloi shekein tzadei chilazon. You remember that in order to extract the blue dye for the curtains over the OL, they needed to capture this chilazon, a kind of a fish, and the tsayadim, the trappers, they would have to tie knots and make nets and then they would untie the nets. And he says here, based on Rashi, that nets are made of ropes that are tied permanently, but sometimes it's necessary to extend the net, so you need a larger net, so you untie some of its knots in order to tie other knots. And finally, Vatofer state firos. The Mishnah says that sewing requires a minimum of 2 stitches to violate the malacha. The Gemara says 2 stitches? Follow kaima. How long can it last when you have 2 stitches? Omar Rabba Bar Chan Omar Rab Yochanan. It's not enough that he sews two stitches, but who should kashran? He has to take the ends of the 2 stitches and knot them together. And here there's going to be a discussion about Meleches Kosher. It would seem that according to the Gemara, he's going to be chayiv in every case of tofer of shtei tefiros for Meleches Kosher as well. And there's a long discussion about this in the Rishonim, because we don't find any specific malacha that requires another action to violate that malacha. And if you require the other action, you're going to violate a second malacha. Each malacha is independent. HaKorel Manas Litvar Kriya B'Mishkan Mihavi. Where did they rip things in the Mishkan? Rabba Rab Zera D'Amri Chavayu. Here we take a look at Ayin Hei. Sheken Yuriya Shenofal Badarna. Sometimes a little animal would, a worm, let's say, would jump onto the curtain and would eat away at the curtain. And then what you'd have to do is you couldn't just sew up that hole. You'd have to be koreaba. First you'd have to rip it and open it a little bit longer and wider, and then tofer noso. So then you could sew it down. So sometimes you actually have to do a kriya to rip it in order to sew it. So we're up to the top of Daf Ayin Hayim and Aleph. In Mirtz Hashem, Blineda, tomorrow we'll start with Omar Rav Zutra on the second line on Daf Ayin Hayim and Aleph. Okay then? So I wish you a very fine day.